is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And welcome to the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Dave Ross in for Stormy today alongside Michael Lombardi. Michael, we got a great show today. Very excited for it. Going to catch up with Will Hill. I call him the King of New York, but he's in Connecticut. We'll catch up with Will here in this hour. Howard Eskin might be the King of Philadelphia. He's going to join us a little bit later on in hour number one. And then buckle up, America. We got him back. Tim Doyle is going to join us to talk all things NBA postseason in hour number two. And Michael, I know you know I always want to talk football with you, but I have to begin with the NBA last night to get your opinion on a couple of things. It's not so much that the T-Wolves just whoosh, the Nuggets up and down the floor in game two in Denver to take a 2-0 lead, but it was almost the non-competitive nature of the reigning defending champs. Michael, what was your big takeaway? Because I know Femi was kind of on the Nuggets, and I was with Femi. I thought the Nuggets should
poor
rebound.
Femi. He couldn't wait to get to the window, Dave. He couldn't wait to get to the window yesterday. Look, we had Vic Lombardi on, a radio host in Denver, also does television, and he talked about how Murray wasn't – his injury is probably more concerning than they're letting on, and it resulted in a 3-for-18 shooting from the floor. Look, JBT's been saying it, that this Timberwolves team – is not a surprise. They were the number one seed going into this. They had one of the best defenses in the National Basketball Association. And even though Rudy Gobert didn't play last night, it was no problem. And I think what we as fans tend to overlook is the volume of the season wear and tear on players. When you play in the finals last year, like the Denver Nuggets did, and you're playing until June, and then you start again at the end of September, and you're playing all the way again, there comes a point of exhaustion, you know? And I know that we all have load management and all that goes on in the NBA, but I do think there's an exhaustion from competitive exhaustion, and there's an exhaustion from just exhaustion. And one of the things Vic said yesterday, Vic Lombardi, we were both concerned about this Nugget bench. And that's proved to be the case. I mean, when you can't rotate guys through with quality, it becomes harder and harder for you to beat a team that does have a really good bench. So, you know, I think Minnesota, no one's believing it yet, although yet last night it should convince you. They're for real. I was on the phone with somebody in the NBA last night during the game, and the guy said to me, look, the three best teams in the league are Boston, Minnesota, and Denver. And so I think that's right.
Well, it was shocking. Again, if game one was the coming out party for Anthony Edwards, game two was like a total team defensive shutdown of Denver's offense. And Michael Malone spoke about what happened in game two. Let's hear from Denver's head coach.
Our guys are disappointed in our performance tonight, all the way across the board, you know, from myself all the way down to player number 18. We got out coached, we got outplayed. And you can feel sorry for yourself, or you can do whatever you can to try to be better come game three. And that's my focus, is rallying these guys to continue to fight. You know, no one said it was going to be easy. And right now we understand that.
Boy, Michael, I love to hear that, because what that says to me from Malone is losing's one thing, being non-competitive and not fighting is another. And he didn't see the fight from his team. And then Nikola Jokic was asked after the game, you know, what do you expect from game three? And he said, I don't know. We'll see. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I like that. Like, where you mentioned it, the exhaustion, it almost feels mental just as much as the physical. And I wonder, you know, it's why we don't see repeat champions very often.
That's right. And I think the season, the mental wear and tear, it's hard. The volume of the competitive nature of the game. And I think Malone is disappointed. But look, let's be clear here. In spite of 14 players being picked on offense in the National Football League's draft, defense matters. And you never can get control of a game unless you can play defense. And even though we have all this analytics and all this nonsense about draft receivers and, you know, we've got to score more points, and that's all important. But at the end of the day, what's really important is who has the level of intensity to play defense, especially in the NBA, which we know certain guys don't play defense. we know certain guys kind of are lacking. And I think Minnesota is the perfect example of a team that has built its team on a defensive temperament, which I think is really the right call and the right way to do it. I know we love offense. I know we want to hire offensive coordinators, but the Kansas City Chiefs won a Super Bowl. As good as Patrick Mahomes is, they won a Super Bowl because of their defense. And I think that's what we're seeing here with Minnesota. Their ability to control the game comes right back to their defense.
You know, Michael, getting back to the Chiefs for a second here and those parallels, because I'm not saying that we just all assume this is the Nuggets window for this dynasty, whatever this is going to be. And I'm not saying it's over, that they're done with this series, even though they're down 0-2. But it doesn't make you appreciate what the Chiefs have done. We just don't see repeat champions in the NFL. Hadn't happened since the mid-2000s with Tom Brady and the Patriots, as you well know. So I look at this and I go, is it just harder than people think? And we just all assume, yeah, it's going to be the Nuggets and the Celtics, and this thing's a foregone conclusion. And then you get here and kind of reality slaps you in the face. And you go, boy, this just is not easy to repeat for all the reasons that you mentioned earlier.
It really is. And it's the wear and tear, right? I mean, you know, we know Murray's not healthy, right? Jokic played still in that game last night. He played 39 minutes. Murray played 36, and the game was not, I mean, the Nuggets only scored, I think they scored 35 points in the first half. Meanwhile, the Timberwolves scored 33 in the second quarter alone. So the game wasn't close really into halftime. And like a lot of people here on the East Coast, that's when I tuned out and I picked it up on YouTube this morning because I wasn't staying awake to watch a route. Yeah, you know, I was going to go to sleep. And so I think that's the – and so those minutes that they piled up were kind of minutes that maybe they shouldn't even have piled up as they get ready to play the game in Minnesota. Well, it's a wonderful thing when you're young, athletic, and in shape is altitude doesn't bother you. You can wear that altitude number on your chest. But the other team, it didn't phase them whatsoever. And you got to love Minnesota. And you got to love – look, it's got to be very rewarding for Tim Connelly, having been the guy who built the Nuggets, to then leave the Nuggets and go and kind of reconfigure the Timberwolves with the addition of Connelly, who stabilizes things for them, and then adding Gobert and figuring out through Finch, his head coach, how that can operate with Karl Anthony Towns playing as well as he did. I mean, he was sensational last night. I mean, the guy was unbelievable, Towns. You know, and he's always been labeled as a non-competitive guy at 12 rebounds, you know, 27 points. He's 10 for 15 from the two-point line, and he's 3 for 5 from the three-point line.
Yeah, they were dominant, and you're right. We talked a lot about roster construction the other morning that you and I were on together, and we're seeing it with this Minnesota squad, now the second betting favorite to win the NBA championship behind the Boston Celtics. The Celtics might get pushed. We'll find out. They're going to have game one against the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight. But last night in the Garden, speaking of the East Coast, what a game, a thriller. 121-117, Knicks get game one over Indiana. Jalen Brunson, I don't know what else you can say, the superlatives you want to add, 43 more points. He's absolutely dominant. To get those 40, was it necessary that this is how they're going to have to win? Well, Jalen Brunson talked about what he thinks of before going to a game. It's not necessarily maybe what we think when it comes to points.
I'm not going thinking I need to score 40. That's not my mindset at all. My mindset is to be aggressive, to make plays for myself and for others. And so, gain the paint and see what's happening. And I mean, I have the confidence I know I could, you know, score in the paint, but I know I have the confidence that my teammates are all moving and getting to open positions where they can be successful as well. And so it's just a constant communication that we have and the trust that we have with each other to do the best we can every single time we're down the court.
It is amazing to watch the, quote, Villanova big three here with Hart and Brunson and DiVincenzo, what they're able to do at the next level, right? Shows you the talent that Jay Wright identified, certainly at Villanova back in his day. But that is it's an interesting mentality. It's almost like a true point guard mentality, which is lost, I think, to some in this generation. But what do you make of the little big man carrying the Knicks now, getting past Philly in round one, and now so far so good in round two?
Well, it took every point. I mean, they only got 3 points off their bench. You know, here's what I looked at the game, and I thought it was a fun game, and I know everybody's complaining about the call, the offensive foul, you know, in the game on Miles Turner on the illegal pick to DiVincenzo. But to me, when T.J. McConnell, who's a nice player, was a 76er at one time, gets 16 shots, and your best player, Tyrese Halliburton, gets mm-hmm. six, something's wrong, right? McConnell got 22 he played 22 minutes, he got 16 shots. Halliburton played 36 minutes, he got six shots. That balance has to change. And it, when it does, you know, maybe they can kind of get this over the top because they showed their bench is strong.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Thibodeau's sitting in his office today saying, I'm going to have to figure this out. Like, I don't want to play my guys. He only played McBride 11 minutes. He played Achiuwa just 4 minutes. He went seven players. But when he went seven players, Robinson played 12 minutes and McBride played 11. He's not going to have a team left. You're not going to get 44, 48, and 44 minutes and 42 minutes out of your starters like he continued to do, or else he's not going to be a rare. The Pacers are going to wear him down. At that pace they played last night, you know, we talked about it yesterday, David, about the pace of the game.
Yeah.
That was good. That's going to be hard. The Knicks can't slow it down. To me, this is a game the Knicks were fortunate to win. But Halliburton's got to play better, and the Knicks got to figure out how they're going to work their bench.
Yeah, and if we're going to have replay, like my only thing would be, if we're going to have it, that's great. Well, we got to utilize it properly. There was in the final minute, a kickball that wasn't a kickball. It should have been a turnover for the Pacers in a tie game. Then DiVincenzo hits a three, and then we saw the Miles Turner. They reviewed the Miles Turner play and said, no, Michael, that's the right call. Like, what are we doing here? If we got replay, let's try to get it right when everybody knows that might not have been the right call. All right, when we come back, let's do a deep dive into the NFC North. It should be wild this year. That's next here in the Lombardi Line.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't done so, what are you waiting for? You got to check it out before you start your betting day. VSiN.com. We got best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, and they do vary. Betting tools, betting guides, it's all there for you each and every day to get you ready for your best wagering day yet. So check out VSiN.com and do so today. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here. We continue this edition of the Lombardi Line. Let's do a deep dive, Michael, into the NFC North, which I think top to bottom, arguably, we'll find out what Minnesota is, could be the best division in football this year on paper. Now, we've got our director, Jeremy Wengel. He's a long-suffering Bears fan. I mean, long-suffering. I've known Jeremy a long time now. Does he have hope this year? I mean, normally you don't want to sell hope, Michael. You know this. You want to sell reality. What's the reality of the Bears draft? Is it as good as everybody in the north and south side of Chicago wants it to be?
Well, you know, let's go back to what Jim Harbaugh said. The Bears draft is predicated on if the offensive line is good enough. That's really going to be, because Dunze and Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Caleb Williams and Swift are going to be dependent upon how good that line is. Now, Ryan Poles, their general manager, you know, he drafted right in the first round last year. He inherited Jenkins, another second-round pick, when he got in that building. So this is all going to come down to the offensive line. Can Braxton Jones play good enough at left tackle? Or the young kid that they drafted in the third round, is he going to be the starter? That's going to be the key to this team. Because for all the skill, the offensive line doesn't need anybody to perform. But all the other positions, as Harbaugh eloquently said, need them to play at a high level. Can they? We shall see. I think that's the key. And there was no real urgency to address that by Poles or their defensive line. Is that going to be good enough? Is, you know, DeMarcus Walker going to be able to fill in and complement Montez Sweat at defensive end? And do they have enough of a defensive front? Remember, this front, this Matt Eberflus defense, is a byproduct of Pete Carroll, and I'm working on a column for tomorrow about Seattle, where Carroll basically started this scheme of having the ability to use the front and coverage to create pressure, create turnovers. It's all about how good are you up front. Are they? Is Dexter, their second-round pick last year, a good enough three technique? Is Billings, who they signed as an unrestricted free agent a year ago from the Raiders, is he good enough? I'm not sure of all those answers, right? I don't know. And if they get any injuries whatsoever like they did last year, it could be problematic for them. So I think they're going to be better. There's no question. The quarterback's going to make them better. But how much better are they? Look, this is Swift. Here's the thing that's interesting. And it always would bother me. This is Swift's third team in three teams. Mm-hmm. Detroit said, no, thank you. We'll draft Gibbs. Philadelphia said, no, thank you. We'll overpay for Barkley. And the Bears come swooping in and sign Swift. Now, I like Swift, but I really do. And I'm a Swifty in that sense. But I'm nervous about why two teams pass on them. They know something that I don't know sitting on the outside. I think that's what I'm worried about.
Oh, that's the headline on X. Michael Lombardi's a Swifty. That's going to be all over there. You're going to plaster it everywhere, Michael. Look,
yeah, there you go.
They're going to have to, you're right. They're going to have to improve that offensive line. They're going to have to get better. I do like the draft on paper, but you're right. It's all going to be predicated up front on both sides of the ball for the Bears.
Everybody loves the draft on paper. David, right. Everybody has loved these drafts on paper. I mean, in 2021, you know, when Chicago drafted, when they drafted Fields, they didn't get just an A-plus for that draft. They didn't get just an A, excuse me. They got an A-plus.
Plus.
Right? I mean, they got an A-plus. So that was the key. And so how did that work out for you? Right? Fields is no longer on the team. Jenkins is a marginal player in the offensive line. Right? You know, they got Larry Brohm, they drafted. He's really not a very good player. So – and this was an A-plus draft. I mean, so I don't know how to give you that answer.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gives these – because you can get an A if you draft a receiver that everybody loves, though you might not be able to get him the football.
Let's go to Minnesota because I'm intrigued by this team, Michael. And, look, we'll find out what J.J. McCarthy is, if he's a day one guy or they go to Sam Darnold. Dallas Turner, they moved up both spots, just one spot to get J.J., moved back up to 17 to get Dallas Turner, the edge rusher out of Alabama. And then you look, they did go kind of back and forth a little bit with DBs and offensive tackle and a center and then a D tackle to round out the draft. Overall, what do you make of what they're trying to do in Minnesota?
Well, I think what Minnesota's trying to do is get away from the Kirk Cousins contract and try to have cap flexibility and really start new but not give ground. I think they're trying to recreate their team on the fly because of the way they were hamstrung with Cousins. They were always putting a patch on the tire. They never bought a new tire. They were, let's put money into next year. Let's sign this guy. They always had cap struggles. And I think what they're trying to do is get younger. They're trying to get more athletic. They're trying to create a team that can be built around a quarterback on a rookie contract. And I think that's something they had to do. And it's always hard to peel that Band-Aid off, right? It's hard to do that. But fortunately, they got a quarterback that they can work around. The Raiders peeled that Band-Aid off last year when they shipped Derek Carr out, but they didn't get somebody to come in and play, young or old. Garoppolo didn't play well. So that's a real issue. I like Minnesota. I think they're one more draft away from kind of adding the pieces. I thought they've had a really good offseason, though. I really do. I think Adam Greenard is a good player, especially considering that Greenard's younger than Danielle Hunter. Mm. You know, you bought youth and you bought a player that's kind of similar to him. And then you get Dallas Turner to play opposite of him. You've got some inside players that you kind of like. They're just going to lean in there. And I think one of the areas that I'm sure that Brian Flores, the defense coordinator, would say we need to improve on is in fact the defensive corner position. Yep. They just haven't been able. They got Byron Murphy, who they signed from Arizona. They need more corners.
You know, Detroit is the favorite to win this division, but you look at the wins total, and the Packers have the same number. Now it's juiced to the under at 10.5. It's juiced to the over for the Lions, but it is both those numbers are set at 10.5. So we saw the emergence of Jordan Love last year. We saw how well they've drafted with second round receivers through the years. Now this year, it does look like when you look at the Packers draft on paper, there was a decided edge here to say, we got to go defense, right? And Joe Carroll's not walking through the door. He's gone, got a new coordinator there in Green Bay. What do you make of the defensive players that they took early in this draft for Green Bay? And you can go right through first and two second-round picks, offensive tackle in the first round, then a linebacker and a safety in rounds two. What do you make of Green Bay's process here as they continue to try to improve?
Well, I think the biggest addition to Green Bay was Jeff Hafley, the defense coordinator, who takes over for Joe Barry. Hafley's going to come in and give them a little bit of a different approach defensively, and I think that's the upgrade they needed. Their talent level on defense was never below par. You know, they've got some really good rushers. Gary, Kenny Clark is a disruptive player inside. Preston Smith can be a really good player. Igwabar, the kid, 55, is really an outstanding pass rusher. They drafted Van Ness in the first round last year, you know, and he's coming along. And then this year they added speed at linebacker. With Quay Walker 2 years ago in the first round pick, they get Cooper from A&M to come in and play, and then they get a free safety. I think this team can be improved offensively. And what we saw last year was when they were playing well, their offensive line could pass protect. The Jordan Morgan kid they drafted from Arizona is really a good player. I think he can slide in and play left tackle. This team can pass protect. That's one thing they did. Now, they're hoping that Josh Jacobs got gas left in his tank, because I thought Aaron Jones was really good for him last year. I thought when Aaron Jones was healthy and he came back, he was really good. Can Jacobs be as good as that? We shall see. But I do think that this team has got very good skill players. None of them picked in the first round. None of them. They have the lowest, one of the lowest payrolls on wide receiver of any team, and yet they have some of the best receivers of any team.
Detroit, who won the division, of course, for the first time in forever last year, they decided to go defense as well. It's similar, right? You're seeing kind of like the two front runners right now are the shortest shots, Detroit and Green Bay. You did see a heavy influx of defense there. So does this tell you that when you go corner, 1-2, and you go safety at 4, D-tackle at 6, that they feel like the offense were pretty set, we just needed help defensively?
Well, and they did it in free agency too, right? Yep. So they trade for Carlton Davis to get him a veteran guy. They bring Mosley, who they signed. Remember, they signed Mosley 2 years ago to give them the corner. Then they signed Robertson from the Raiders, who was one of the better Raider defensive players. Yeah, I mean, they made no bones about it. They had to improve their back end. And then they also trying to prove their front end by signing Davenport, the first-round pick from the Saints, to give them a compliment on the other side of Hutchinson. It's pretty clear Detroit feels like we need to upgrade our personnel because our scheme and our coaching is good enough defensively. We just got to get better players. And I think they will. I mean, you know, they drafted, they put resources into it, whether it's the Arnold kid from Alabama or the Rackstraw kid that they drafted in the second. They're going to get better defensively, and offensively, they just filled the holes they needed. They signed Kevin Zeitler, who's a very experienced offensive guard, to replace Jackson. So this team's pretty well ready to go, and I think they're motivated to go too.
Yeah, Holmes and Campbell, that front office and head coach combo's working out pretty darn well so far. We're going to go up to Will Hill. That's next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. The only price of $240, you can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today. Going to give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day by using the promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you're going to gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see who has the best win percentage and ROI, 19 hours of live programming, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems from professional handicappers, our exclusive betting splits showing you where the money and the bets are moving for every single game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today. Claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 with the promo code Lombardi. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. It is time to bring in, I like to call him the King of New York, Michael, but he lives in Connecticut, so it's really a misnomer when we bring in Will Hill. But he is the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line, my co-host right here on the network on Saturday night. Will, how are you? And we got to get right to it. Your biggest impression and takeaway from what you've seen so far in the new series, as we've got the Knicks up one zip, and the Nuggets, reigning defendings, on the ropes down 0-2.
I'll start, I guess, with how that game was officiated last night. And it benefited me. I have Knicks to win the series. I have Knicks minus 1.5 games. And the Knicks are such a pleasure to watch. They're gritty. They're tough. You take all those Nova kids, man, they are street tough. But, boy, they are tough to watch. They flop. Brunson's a great story, too. Brunson is always looking for fouls. I mean, it's they flop around like fish. It's like the Funhouse episode of The Sopranos. It's $4 a pound. They are flopping around everywhere looking for calls, and that's just a completely ridiculous moving screen call where DiVincenzo flopped on it. I mean, what happened to legislating these flops? Some of these games, they let him play so physical. You know, Denver, Minnesota was basically like prison ball. They're just all over each other, which I don't really have a problem with. But there's got to be some consistency with it. To call that moving screen and to miss the kick ball, I mean, what's the point of review? We sit here and we review every other thing. We still get the calls wrong. I just really left a bad taste in your mouth, even though, you know, I was rooting for the Knicks. I was an unfortunate ending for that game.
Do you think the Knicks can play at this pace, playing seven guys and the Pacers bench being really good? And last night they should have won, could have won, and Halliburton takes six shots and TJ McConnell takes 16.
Yeah, I mean, Halliburton, I think, Dave, I think you have some Eastern Conference futures on the Pacers. You've been following the Pacers. I've started, you know, dive into to study the Pacers with the playoffs starting. Not that I've been dialed in all year, but if you look at the splits with Halliburton, he has not been the same. He hurt his hamstring in January. He's just not been the same player. The explosive's not there. The shot comes and goes. I guess the hamstring and the shot are tied together. You can't get the same lift on the jumper. So I think that's why, you know, you look at Halliburton and you say, wow, this guy was like an MVP candidate most of the year. How can he only take six shots? I just don't think he's healthy. And you look around the league, some of these guys are just so beat up. I mean, we know Giannis and Embiid was always hurt, but Murray's clearly beat up. Halliburton, I think, is beat up. So to answer your question, no, I don't think they can sustain it. I thought they'd actually stretch the bench more. I was looking at props for maybe Achiuwa and Burks last night just because, hey, it's game one. We finished the series basically against Philly playing, like you said, six guys, six and a half guys, the three Nova guys, Ananobi and the two bigs. McBride played like 9 minutes in game six against Philly. You figure, hey, it's game one. We're home. Let's use the bullpen a little bit. Let's get somebody else in here and just eat some minutes up. But they did not do that. We'll see what, you know, Tibbs, man, he's all gas, no break. So I don't know if he thinks that way, but I'd expect we see at least a little more Achiuwa, a little more McBride, just to give these guys a breather. Because, no, I don't think it's sustainable here for Nate.
Well, you're right on about Halliburton. That is true. He is banged up, and it has not been talked about a lot. And I think, you know, watching him play last night, I was really impressed the way he was facilitating. But Michael's right. They're leaving him open at some point. At sometimes you're just going to have to shoot it and live or die by it. He's got to take more shots, but he has been pretty darn good as a facilitator. Game two tomorrow, back in the Garden, Knicks are laying 5. Total has now jumped up as this one easily went over the posted total last night. 220.5 now we're seeing here. See, I'm more concerned as somebody on the Pacers side here that maybe their bench played their best game and they still didn't win. But what do you make of the Pacers-Knicks game two?
Yeah, that's a fair concern because they got good games out of Top and they got good games out of some other guys. And man, it still wasn't enough. So you do worry about that where, hey, they come out flat and they just get run out of the building. I'm going to take the points here. I do think this is a must win. That term gets thrown around too much. But hey, yeah, you're probably not beating this Knicks team 4 out of 5 with no home court. So if you want any realistic hope of winning the series, I think they have to win. I usually think when you're the lower seed and you really, if you're serious about winning the series, usually you have to be up 3-1 because you're 2-2, 5-7 are on the road. Like we saw that in Magic Cavs. That's a rough scenario. So I think they need this game. I think the Knicks, this is going to be their 8th playoff games. They played, 6 against Philly, 1 last night. They played 7 playoff games. All of them have been close. The Knicks, they're good. They're gritty. They're all those things, but they don't blow anybody out. So I just think taking the points is not a bad idea. I think this will be a close game. I think the Knicks will win in, 6. I was torn between 5 or 6 going in. I think the 5 looks a little dismissive now. I don't think it'll go 7, although those teams looked pretty evenly matched last night. I'll just take the points here. I think this series is maybe a little closer than I thought. These teams are maybe a little closer than I thought. And again, the Knicks just don't pull away from anybody. And Lombardi brings up the point about the bench minutes. They don't have a bench, so you worry about them running out of gas at some point. So I'll take the 5 here with Indy.
And the Timberwolves, we saw what they did last night. And the Nuggets don't have a bench either. And the Nuggets look exhausted. Murray looks hurt. Where are you going in this series? And who did you pick before the series started?
The pick I gave out on VSiN was Timberwolves plus 1.5 games. I was hopeful because I have Nuggets futures. I said Nuggets in 7 just because they have Jokic, they have home court. And I said after game one, I'm in a lot of trouble. I'm in more than a lot of trouble. I'm dead. Those futures are dead. This series is over. The Timberwolves basically look like the 2000 Ravens. I mean, they are just harassing everybody at every level. And the reason I was so concerned after game one, it's just you could see the matchup. I mean, a lot of Denver's offense comes, you know, in the paint, floaters, layups, alley-oops to Gordon. Minnesota's length is just so bothersome. And Denver's not a team. They're not going to get to the foul line a bunch. They're not going to hit a bunch of threes. They got to live in the paint. And, you know, Jokic has gotten cooked defensively. He hasn't been great on offense. He's been good. So maybe you get a breakout game. Your hope if you're Denver, hey, Jokic just has one of these games where he's got 40, 13, and 12, and he just carries you to a win. And then all of a sudden, hey, it's 2-1, and you got a chance to even it. I guess it's possible. Minnesota just looks like the better team. And Denver, really from the tip last night, did not match the intensity of Minnesota. Minnesota was just on a 10 in terms of intensity. And Denver just looks tired. They looked slow. I think the title last year, the turnaround to these teams is just like you guys were talking about, the open, it's hard to repeat. And I think, look, people mock the Lakers because they play all these close games against the Nuggets and they couldn't finish. But I do think maybe the Lakers took something out of them where, hey, every game you're down 15, 10, 15 points. Coming from behind, I think, took something out of him. And Murray, like you guys said, just doesn't look healthy. Knee, I guess now he has shin splints. I guess he's got a calf injury. And by the way, throwing a heat pack onto the court during live play, I've seen guys get thrown out for worse. So again, I don't know how these games are officiated, how that's allowed, and how that's not a suspension or whatever, but doesn't sound like he's going to be suspended. But I think Minnesota rolls here.
Nuggets, by the way, are now 4-1 dogs to win this series. So they're really up against it. And I'm with you, Will. There are a lot of Minnesota Laker fans out there on X last night patting themselves on the back. I do want to get to a game tonight. OKC against Dallas as they start off this series. And I know because of what's happening with Minnesota in Denver, that's getting all the shine right now. This series, this could be a fascinating. I don't know how long it's going to go. But OKC's laying 3.5. If the T-Wolves have been a revelation so far, what do we make of the Thunder potentially getting out of this series, Will? Do you like them in this spot?
Yeah, they're like the quietest little one seed ever, aren't
yeah.
they? I just think everyone looks at, hey, they've got a good future. They got all these picks. They got young players. Their future's bright, which it is, but their present is pretty damn good. They're really well coached, and I just think I like them in the series. I think they can spread Dallas out. Dallas is kind of a slow plotting team. I think if you can make Luka play in space and put him in situations where he's going to have to guard maybe Shea or some of these other smaller guys. There's a lot of speed, a lot of shooting, a lot of spacing here for OKC. I think Dallas didn't have that exposed against the Clippers. Clippers are an old team, a slow team, George and Harden and these guys. Of course, Kawhi doesn't play. That lack of speed doesn't really get exposed. I think there's too much speed for OKC. I think they got the seventh game at home, so I like them to win the series. I think they win tonight.
And how about the Cavs? You like their first half under of 50.5 points tonight?
I just don't see a lot of pass for offense here. I think that the Celtics can play Mitchell straight up. They're not going to have to double. They're not going to have to overhelp on anyone. No Jaren Allen, so no second chances. Boston just has a lot of answers. They got a lot of big wings. They've got a lot of guys where, look, they could just guard you one-on-one. And Cleveland's going to have to play some of their defensive lineups on the other end just to survive. And that means guys like Okoro, some non-shooters. To me, this is a little similar to the Miami series. We're going to look up at halftime, and the Cavs are going to have, you know, high 30s, low 40s points. I tried to make a case in my head for the Cavs. I just can't see them getting more than, I don't know, maybe one game here. This is just, I can't remember a softer path to a conference final or a final than the Celtics have. Celtics should roll tonight.
Yeah, it's gone up from 11 to 12.5, as you see here, a lot of Celtics money coming in. Very quickly, in game three for Minnesota and Denver, you really don't see Denver giving any punch back in this thing? You really do think, because Barkley called it, he said this is going to be a sweep, and this thing is not getting back to Denver. How do you see game three going?
And it's hard to watch the game last night and say, you know what, I see a path for Denver. I don't see what the path is for Denver. Again, unless Jokic just explodes and goes for, you know, 40, 15, and 12 and is just the best player on the court by a mile, Minnesota just looks so much longer, so much faster, hungry. Edwards is a tremendous player. I mean, we've seen crazier things than a four-point underdog winning, but this series does look over.
All right, so going to go roll with the T-Wolves in game three and lay the 4.5 points. They've covered every game, Will, so it's not necessarily probably the right side to be on. Appreciate you as always, my friend. Again, should have bet more. Everybody get your podcast. Will, how's that coming along?
Going great. Appreciate you guys having me. Thanks.
Awesome. Always great to have the King of New York, who resides in Connecticut, join us on the Progressive Guest Line. When we come back, going to go to Philadelphia, Michael. Howard Eskin, oh, I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say about what happened with the Sixers, and we'll look ahead to more NBA talk. That's next here on the Lombardi Line.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NBA playoffs are, of course, heating up. So is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can bet just $5 to get 150 in bonus bets instantly just by downloading the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Do so now. Use the code VSiN only on DraftKings, and the crown can be all yours. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. We continue this edition of the Lombardi Line. And Michael, a great pleasure to have Howard Eskin. Whenever I was in D.C. and covering anything that had to go to New York or Philly, I always put on WIP and listen to Howard Eskin. He joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. Howard, we got to get right to it because I know Michael's got a lot of thoughts on what happened with the 76ers as we watch the Knicks now battle the Pacers in the second round. Had the exit interviews with Daryl Morey yesterday. You were there. What's your biggest takeaway post-Sixers season?
He didn't say anything. At least he didn't tell you that they were a championship contender. And then it would have been an embarrassment and an insult. You know, they've got two players. They're going to build around two stars. I think Tyrese Maxey is the best player on the team. Maybe not the most talented, but the best player on the team. And Joel Embiid's always going to get hurt, plays for himself. He doesn't listen to the coach all the time, where Maxey plays for his teammates, and he plays every second hard. And I don't know that Joel Embiid either does that or can do that with the shape that he's never in. But what Daryl Morey said yesterday, other than those are the two guys we're going to build around, and the two players he said he knows he's going to keep are Paul Reed and Council. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I mean, that's, you know, I know they have a lot of free agents, but to identify those two people, Paul Reed is just below average, even as a backup. So they're where they are. They're going to sign old players because he's going to try to win in 1 year and 2 years. And I just don't, I don't have any confidence in Daryl Morey. The bottom line is I have zero confidence in Daryl Morey. One of the reporters asked the question, how would you grade yourself? Which is a foolish question anyway. How do you grade yourself? Now, the question is, how can anybody or fans have confidence in you when you haven't made this team better since you've been here? It's pretty simple. So, I mean, it's just, now he said nothing yesterday, which is probably better than some of the things I thought he would say.
You know, Howard, I was going through it, and I can't find a trade that he made that was good. I can't find, you know, Maxey, he can claim, but Maxey was promised to be picked by the Sixers when Morey first arrived. And in his time here, even he admitted that the Buddy Hield trade didn't work. And instead of looking at a spreadsheet, he might want to look at the game tape. So, like, I know from your perspective and my perspective how we both feel, but where does Josh Harris gain this optimism that he believes the 76ers are a model organization when they haven't gotten past the second round of any playoff series?
Josh Harris, there's a lot of things to decipher there from what you just said. Josh Harris only cares about making money. He doesn't have the passion to win. Josh Harris only now cares about the football team in Washington. That's all he cares about. That's why he extended Daryl Morey. For what? What did he do to get a 3-year extension? And he's probably one of the highest, if not the highest paid guys in his position in the NBA, probably making close to $15 million a year. He's stealing money. And Tyrese Maxey was not him. He doesn't claim people kind of throw that out there, and he kind of lets it sit. He publicly said when he came, because he'd only been here for a little over a week, that was Elton Brand's choice. And the other thing that goes into that, Elton Brand made a trade for Markel Fultz, which was a 3-way deal, and they ended up with Oklahoma City's pick, which ended up to be the pick that they took for Tyrese Maxey. So Maxey is all Elton Brand. But Josh Harris, the 76ers have the worst ownership in Philadelphia in my lifetime. They're the worst. Raise ticket prices. 4 years they tried to lose. If I asked Josh Harris, how far is the foul line from the basket? He'd probably have to look around and throw out a lifeline to get the answer to the question. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Josh Harris is a clueless when it comes to sports, but he's not clueless when it comes to making money because he can do that.
Well, you mentioned he's going to be focused on the team up the Beltway there in D.C. next year with the Commanders. I want to talk about the Eagles, Howard, because we know, Michael and I have talked about it, no team's repeated here in 20 years in the NFC East. The Cowboys did run down the Eagles at the end of last year. by all, it looks like a pretty good offseason. Obviously, feels like an upgrade with the coordinators here for the Eagles going in. They're co-favorites with the Cowboys, a win total of 10.5 for Philadelphia this year. What do you make of Philadelphia's offseason so far?
Well, the draft, you normally, well, you don't draft for need if it's not the best player. But they actually got, and a lot of other people feel the same way, they got the best player with their first-round pick in Mitchell, Quinyon Mitchell, and they needed a corner. The second pick, people believe they got the best player available at that spot, another defensive back. And the only reason he slipped to the second round is because he had an injury at Iowa in his senior year, a leg injury. They got Landon Dickerson that slipped to the second round. They're not afraid. If their doctors check a player out and they say, you know, he's going to be okay, they trust their doctors and they go and trade the player. But I think they did a good job, but it all comes down to one thing. It all comes down to the quarterback, and he's got to play better. You know, they did prove eventually. They signed some players. They lost two players, Kelsey on the offensive line, which he's really hard to replace, but they think they've got some people there. And they lost Fletcher Cox on the defensive line. But they believe they have people that can step in, not at that level, but it comes down to the quarterback. It comes down to the quarterback. But they did have, Howie Roseman did have a good offseason. I mean, I think not just myself, but a lot of people around the league have said the same thing.
And I agree. My question to you, Howard, is the connectivity between Hurts, which we saw last year, wasn't good. You know, sitting by himself, seemed aloof. Is that going to be better because of the addition of Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator?
I think it's going to be better because the head coach hasn't really addressed that with him. But other people I know in the organization have addressed that with him. They say, you know, you got to be more personable with your teammates. And he understands. It's just his, it's unfortunately, he works hard. Unfortunately, it's his makeup. He works hard. I think Nick Saban really ruined him because, you know, Nick Saban tells all the media, it's rat poison. It's all rat poison. And he uses that phrase. You know, it just, you got to open up a little bit. It's just, if somebody's going to, they're going to criticize you whether you open up or you don't open up. And if you say something, it's, oh, they're going to use it against me. And then 24 hours later, you move on. So it's been addressed with other people, and he knows it and he understands it. But he's also got to find, he's got to make better reads. He's got to be better against the blitz. He's got to do things which he did the year before, but he didn't do last year when teams adjusted to him. Now, the new offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, everybody thinks will help, and we'll see. But it really, I mean, coaches can coach, but players got to carry through, you know, what you've been coached. And that's what's got to happen. And if that happens, the Eagles could be a good team. In the NFC, I think Green Bay is the best team. I just love what they did at the end of last year. Detroit's good, but now they got to do it again after the expectations are a lot different. I'm not a believer in San Francisco right now. Because teams that lost in the Super Bowl, only one of those teams in 30 years is going back the next year. They're just not as good for whatever reason. I don't understand why, and nobody has a real answer. But when you look at it, Dallas will always choke, and that's what they do. That's the best trait they have, is they choke. I don't worry about Dallas. And there's nobody else in the Eagles division. So the NFC is the place to be if you want to go far during the season and in the playoffs. But they're going to have to win in the regular season. Unfortunately, they have to play Green Bay in Brazil, which is a home game. And they've taken away a home game, and it makes it a neutral game for what could be a tiebreaker at the end of the year in the conference. So that wasn't fair what the NFL did, but the NFL doesn't care about fair. All they care about is, you know, how much money are they going to generate. So, and I don't know what it is in Brazil that they generate, but I guess it's international television dollars. Who knows? Expanding the game. But that's unfortunate for the Eagles to have that game taken away from home. So, but they're good. They're going to be good.
7-1 for Philadelphia to win the NFC next year. Howard, great stuff as always. Appreciate you joining us here on the
great
Progressive.
Great work, Howard. Thank you, Howard.
Have a great day. Have a great day.
There he is, everybody. Howard Eskin, give him a follow on X. When we come back, we'll figure out what's on Michael's mind. That's next here in the Lombardi Line.